This is episode 97 with Chris Bakke.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxy.
Welcome, everybody, to As Told by Nomads podcast, and today I have with me a two-timer. His name is Chris Bakke. You might remember him from One Weird Globe fame. He talked about his travel blog, which focuses on the weird and offbeat destinations around the world. Well, he's here again, and today he has a new project to talk about. This is called the Choose Away books and chooseaway.com. But I'm going to let him talk about that more, and we're going to dive into what he's been up to since then. He's moved. And we're just going to talk about different things you can do as a writer across different continents. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hello, Tayo. How are you?
Pleasure's mine. I'm great. So last we talked, I think you were in Korea or Thailand. I can't remember. It was either one of those.
I think it was Thailand. We moved around a lot around Thailand. We were in each place for about 6 months in Thailand. But now we are in Medellin, Colombia. Medellin is the former home of the Mr. Pablo Escobar.
Who, I was about to say that.
was very well known for his string of crimes and drugs and all that. In case you're wondering, you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's so unsafe. No, it's not. All of the drugs and all of that stuff has faded into the background. And today, the city is as clean and as awesome as any first world city deserves to be. There's a working two-line metro system. There's plenty of buses to get you around town. The libraries, and this is the thing I like the most about the city, the libraries are the most modern and awesome sort of looking buildings that you will find around the city. You've got all the skyscrapers and the houses and the tiendas and the shops and all this sort of stuff, but it's the libraries of all the buildings in town that really stand out from an architectural standpoint.
All right. Right now, I have to check it out. Medellin. Is Medellin the two L's?
It's actually the way that they pronounce it here. When I first saw it, I was like, Medellin? Okay, like medallion? Or how does that work? And then, of course, you go back to what you think you know about Spanish. If you never learned Spanish in school, like I didn't, you might think, okay, two L's is like a Y.
Y, was what I thought.
And, exactly. So a lot of people, they come here and they go, oh, Medellin. And then they begin hearing the locals speak, and it's Medellin. Don't ask me how you get like a ZH or a J sound from two L's. I don't know. You'll hear it both ways, in all honesty, but it's properly pronounced Medellin, as I've been told many, many times by many, many people.
No, I love it, and thank you for educating the audiences, as usual. So, Choose Away Guides, which, that's what you're up to now. And on the website, you describe it as interactive travel guides to world famous city. A choose your own adventure type of book. So can you talk about what you're doing? Because I know you're doing a lot from now to the end of the year. And how the readers can get involved.
Sure. Okay, so first off, just as a show of hands, do you remember reading the choose your own adventure books growing up?
Oh my goodness, 500 people just raised their hands. You see them?
I loved those books as a kid. Now, if you're not from the U.S., if you didn't grow up in the late 80s or early 90s, Choose Your Own Adventure book were books that give you a choice at the bottom of some pages. So, for example, if you choose to go into the palace, turn to page 10. If you choose to explore outside, turn to page 12. And so you turn to the page, you'd read the next page or two of the story, and then you'd make more choices. And your choices, good or bad, would eventually lead you to some unique endings. Some were great endings. You saved the girl. You saved the planet. Some were bad endings. You got eaten by the Loch Ness monster. You got devoured by something else. You got killed by the plane. You know, so these are, you know, pretty safe endings, you know, G and PG rated, if you will. But, yeah, so your choices determined how the story went. And I loved these books as a kid. I loved them. I loved having the ability to choose my own way instead of the way that the writer wanted me to do it. So about a year ago, actually, I was sitting down. I was beginning to put together an itinerary guide for Bangkok. And I actually asked myself, what if you made a guide where instead of being told where to go, what to do by some, you know, well-meaning person, sure, but what if you got the choice? What if you chose each step of the way, where you would go, what you would do? And so I thought, okay, well, guidebooks already kind of let you do that. You know, you get a 300-page guidebook, and there's all these choices in the book. The problem with the guidebooks is there are so many choices in a book, and they're all scattered over the city. You don't know what's closer to you or further away. And so maybe you try to do an app or something. Anyways, so I started with this notion of creating a series of books. Or just the first book was the Bangkok book, and to describe where to go, what to do, with you, the reader, the traveler, having the choice each step of the way. Each day starts with what time are you ready to go? Before 9 o'clock, between 9 and 10, between 10 and 11, between 11 and noon, or it's afternoon. And so based on that, you get three new choices. Would you rather go to the museum, the temple, the palace? And so you'll tap which one you want to go to. And you once you pull it up, you'll see the picture, the name of the place, the address, admission costs, what the hours are, a little description. And then, what's next? Hmm. And you have three more choices coming up. So you'll end up going to four or five places in each day. And again, you choose every step of the way. So once you get to the end of the day, you can unlock the location index, which lets you see an alphabetized list of every single place in the book. So if you want to skip around or kind of hack the book a little bit, you can do that as well.
So that's, I mean, I'm just thinking and I'm trying to picture it in my way. And that's really, that's such a cool idea. I don't know why I didn't think of it. I don't know why I didn't think of it. But, so now you're going to like invite people to be authors, essentially. You're going to tell them to like go on their own adventure almost and find their own, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I wrote the first one about Bangkok, and I realized that I'm kind of limited in how much time and effort I have to go actually see the places for myself. So I had the idea to begin working with other travel bloggers, other authors, other local experts, people that know a town like the back of their hand. And I began working with some other travel bloggers. For the first book I didn't write was by a guy named Jim Cheney. He wrote the book about Philadelphia. And so I began putting a template together with him to give him a pretty standardized mindset of like how to write the book and so on. And I kind of think of him as my test guinea pig. He's an awesome guy. He keeps a great blog over at uncoveringpa.com, just like Pennsylvania's abbreviation, Uncovering PA. Mm-hmm. And he wrote the book about Philly, and that came out a little bit later, the beginning of January, actually, January 2015. And then I kind of began thinking about the best way to move forward with this project, and that was to create a pretty standardized sort of template and a pretty standardized way of working with each city. So what I do now is I'm constantly looking for expats, for nomads, for locals, local experts, travel bloggers, travel writers, basically anybody that knows a world-famous city like the back of their hand. And the reason I say world-famous cities, these are the bigger cities where there's lots going on, lots to do, and there's always tourists going, well, what do I do? What do I do? There's typically a lot of them around. So thus far, as of when we're recording this, we have done books on Bangkok, Philadelphia, Bangkok food, Sydney, Amsterdam and Chicago. And coming up before we finish out 2015, three books are already in the work. There's going to be Prague, it's going to be Houston, and Lisbon. So if you know a major world-famous city like the back of your hand, go to chooseaway.com. All the information is there. And you're also able to play through the first day of the Bangkok book, so you can kind of get a feel of how it works. So authors, when they write the Chooseaway books, they make 70% of all royalties received. And that's their money. It's the money that goes towards paying them for their hard work and writing and really getting to know a city really well. I keep the other 30% as for my cut for editing and formatting and putting the book together, putting it out there, helping to promote it, stuff like that. You are asked to obviously help promote the book on your blog, maybe your social media, wherever you have an audience online. And the more you put your book out there, there is a correlation between how much you're able to help promote it and how well you do in the end, and so on.
Awesome. No, I'll definitely put all this information in the show notes. And like I said, it sounds really interesting because it's such an interactive project that, you know, you're giving someone something to do. And I love the Choose Your Adventure, example that you gave, because it's reminiscent of, type of things that I used to do.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's like you're giving someone a chance to almost,
best of all, with these Choose Away books, there are no bad endings.
That is true.
If you read the Choose Your Own Adventure books, you know, you got eaten by a dragon. You got lost in space. You got sucked into a black hole. These are not good endings.
No, they're not. They're not the most tasteful of endings as well. They're like, why would I have to get eaten?
And honestly, I think that's why I liked them as a kid, because they weren't really safe. You know, you actually feel like there was some danger in it. And then, of course, I don't know how many other people did this as kids, but when you read the books and you have to make a choice where you're pretty sure neither of them are really good, you put your finger on that page you're turning from, then you go to one ending and you go, no, I didn't like that. I'm going to go back to the other page and see what happens.
No, I hear you.
So, yeah, no bad endings in these books. You're always going to end at the end of the day. And that brings up the location index, the chance to start a new day. And it's there for those people that like to plan ahead of time, they want to read through the book and kind of pick and choose the places. That's there for you. It's really designed and written for someone that's going on the fly without planning too far ahead of time. Let the book kind of take you and guide you as you go.
Love it. And staying on this author path, can you talk about what it's like to write your first book? Because I imagine some people taking on, you know, your idea here would be first-time authors. So can you talk about what to expect?
Okay. Well, I want to talk more generally to your audience here. It's not just about my series, but if you're thinking about writing a book, one of the things you want to consider is specifically, as specific as you can get, who is your reader? Is this a 30-something person? Is this a 40-something person? Are you primarily writing to men or women? Are you writing to a specific nationality? Is there a specific tech level or a geek level you're writing towards? If you're writing a book about, let's say, computer coding, you kind of have that mindset. This is a beginner's book. This is an introductory book. Or this is a book for experts. It's an advanced level book. A lot of nonfiction books kind of start with this beginner level persona or avatar in their mind, and then they kind of get to intermediate level subjects as the time goes on. So really think about who your audience is. What questions might they be having? What issues might they be having? Finding something that will work for them. So to put my money where my mouth is, my avatar, my persona for these books, are 20-somethings and 30-somethings that like to travel, that may have a limited time to travel, that don't want to go to the same place as everyone else goes. Like, have you ever heard of the Lonely Planet effect?
No, I haven't.
Okay. It's kind of a slang way to say it. Whenever Lonely Planet or another really big name travel book publishes a book about a place and they recommend a place, that place gets really famous and really popular, and what inevitably happens is the service begins to go down, the price begins to go up, but people still come because, hey, it's recommended by Lonely Planet. So a lot of places begin to decline somewhat, and it's unfortunate, but they do begin to decline once they've been featured in Lonely Planet. So what I do with the authors that I work with, I try to tell them, find me places that about half of them be mainstream places that everyone knows about. Half of them could be the lesser traveled, the local secrets, the off the beaten path sort of places that your average tour guide book wouldn't tell you about. And the main reason for that is to help you get to some fun places that you haven't heard about, your friends hadn't heard about. So,
Love it. So find your avatar and really just write to them. You know, talk to them, know the intended audience you're trying to reach out to. And just write like you're talking to them.
Exactly. And now, and also, the more similar you are to them, the more that can help you. But at the same time, you don't have to be like the people you're writing to. It can help you, but it's not a requirement or whatever. But if you're thinking about writing a travel book, let's say, because this is kind of a travel-related podcast here, you might also want to think about what things have you learned on your journey that other people will really take to heart, will they really enjoy. I think too often people just say, oh, I want to write a book about me and all the cool stuff I've done. Not thinking about what's the reader going to take away from that.
Right. Okay.
You know.
So have what the reader's going to take away and find the avatar. So now you've written the book. What is the next step? You know, what's the next step for these first-time authors?
Okay. Well, first off, pour yourself a glass of wine. Get yourself a manicure. Writing often feels like the hardest part. So give yourself some congratulations and some props, because I say this truthfully and honestly, you deserve it, okay? At the same time, you have reached base camp at Everest.
Mm-hmm.
We're not at the top of the mountain yet, my friend. We are at base camp, okay? You've climbed a long way to get to base camp, and you think, oh my gosh, we've arrived, that's awesome! And then you look up, and then you go, holy mother of God, that is the tallest mountain I've ever seen. Of course it's the tallest mountain.
And that is the tall, you know, that's such a good analogy. You picked the tallest mountain in the world.
So a lot of people think about writing the book as being the challenging part. And then once that's done, they're over the hump. All they need to do is market it, and then they can sit back and make $1 billion. That does not happen. And part of the reason it doesn't happen is because if you're a first-time author, or you're just any really new author, we don't really have the base, the marketing base, the fan base, to go out and tell people about our book. So, you know, you might go on podcasts, you might send messages to your email list, you might talk about it where you can, but the marketing part ends up being more work. Or it should be more work than writing the book. And I'll say this again so it's clear. You should spend more time marketing and talking about your book and playing up your book than you spent writing your book.
So it's an ever going event. It's never ending.
It doesn't have to be an ever going, always lasting sort of thing. But in terms of identifying the audience that you're trying to reach,
mm-hmm.
combined with the reality that it's a very crowded market in the ebook world right now, there's a lot of books coming out there, some great, some awesome, some not so much, and you have to cut through that noise. So if your book is in fact the best thing since sliced bread, and you can get someone to write about it or help you, you know, talk about it, awesome. But the idea of, I'm just going to write a book and put it on Amazon and then begin collecting buku bucks, it doesn't happen that way anymore. And part of that reason is because it's got to the point where there are just so many ebooks out there. So please do plan to be marketing your book for months after you've finished writing. And I do say months, and maybe even up to a year. Part of this marketing will start in the weeks and months before you've even finished writing it to put it on sale. So as far as a timeline goes, if you want to think about that, whatever date you think you might have it ready for publication, begin thinking 3 months before that. Try to sit down and figure out, okay, who would be the people I want to reach with this book in terms of where are they looking for information? So if you're looking at the 20 or 30-somethings, you might think, okay, which blogs do they read? Which podcasts do they listen to?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to start reaching the people that keep those podcasts or keep those blogs. You want to find the influencers that your book will resonate with their audience.
Love it.
And that's it. Yeah, that's a big part of it. So
love it. Now, you know, when we were doing show notes, one of the things you said that could be a potential topic was how to manage writers on 4 different continents and still sleep in on the weekends. And that, and, you know, I don't know. I was trying to do my
that accent.
I have no idea what accent that was, but I was like, that is so interesting. I want to know what that's like, because sleeping in on weekends and still managing writers simultaneously on 4 different continents, that sounds intriguing to me.
I know.
How do you do it, sir?
How do I do it? Okay, so with the Choose Away book, I do in fact have, I have had writers on 4 continents. As soon as I can write my own book about Medish, that'll make continent number 5. Very simply, if you're ever in a position where you're looking to work with other authors or work with other people on different continents, one of the biggest things is to know what you want them to do, tell them how to do it, show them how to do it, and then make sure they did what they said they were going to do. You may have heard the 3-step process to presenting. Tell them what you're going to say, say it, and then tell them what you said. It's surprisingly, amazingly simple or similar to that mindset. And the main thing to do to keep it just as open a communication, as transparent a communication as you can make it, because the less confusion that gets introduced into that, the better.
Right. No. So setting up systems and being clear really helps. Is what you say.
Exactly. Yeah. So with the books we have now, I've gotten very good at standardizing virtually every portion or facet of the book. Now, if you're wondering, well, doesn't that take away from their originality or their creativity? Maybe a little bit. But what it ends up doing is it makes a clear, consistent, uniform style and a uniform goal for every book in the series. And that also helps people when they go to buy a book. If they had a great experience with one book in the series and they feel and they understand they'll have a similar sort of experience with another book in the series, then they'll go for that one a little bit more easily. It's the same reason the franchise model with restaurants and other businesses is so successful. If you had a good experience at one Long John Silver's or whatever, you can go to another one knowing they serve the same food, basically the same prices, similar restaurant styles, and all that other stuff.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, basically build a franchise of of authors, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Standardizing everything is one big aspect of it. A couple of other things here that might be some help here. Just thinking about what you want them to do, but also targeting the right people. The people that I work with are generally first-time authors. They're generally travel bloggers, and they're generally folks that, by definition, they need to know the place really well. But I also try to look for people that are willing to try something new. They're willing to listen and take feedback and take advice. And part of the way I do that is just, you know, by talking to them back and forth, and also to, you know, checking out their blog, checking out their Facebook feed, and getting to know them as a person. It's very easy to just say, okay, well, they're a qualified person. I'll just send them my template, and they're off. I personally would want a bit more than that, so that's what I try to do with them. So yeah, keeping the lines of communication clear, keeping track of their progress. Like I have a spreadsheet right now that just shows me their name, when they first agreed, the deadline that we agreed to, their current status, the date of that status, and if there's anything else that I need to remember about them that I might otherwise forget. Right now, Just looking at the sheet, I can tell you I have several people working on stuff, a couple people that are about to fall behind. And so, okay, I'm just going to make a note here.
See, I'm going to type. That's why I do this podcast, to help you, you know, remember those people that are falling behind.
but honestly, there's just a couple out of maybe a dozen or so. So, keeping up with every little, don't have to keep up with every little thing. In many cases, if you're working with people that understand what they're supposed to do, even if you've all, and blah, 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 and if you've given them the thought process behind why you've asked them to do what you want them to do, they'll understand it instead of just blindly following it. So, for example, I ask writers, think of half the place that should be mainstream, half the place that should be, you know, local secrets off the beaten path, whatever. And the reason for that is to give people something new to look forward to seeing, while having many of the places they may already be familiar with or looking forward to seeing.
No, that's you know, it sounds like a very smart way to do it. So I appreciate that. So we've talked about how to manage writers in four different continents while you still sleep in on the weekends, writing your first book, and then now the next step would be making money off, you know, of travel beyond your, you know, maybe they're getting into writing. So what are the different ways travel writers, bloggers, whatever, can make money?
Okay. Well, one thing to think about with making money off of travel is that you can use the same experience in many different ways, many different times. If you've ever heard the term article spinning, where some writers in the past have taken one article and they've spun it, so they've used different words and they've, you know, ever so slightly changed their articles to create different versions of the article. That's not what I'm suggesting in the slightest. Everything I want you to do is white hat, is legal, is above board, is something you can be totally honest with people about. So let's say I went to Barcelona recently, earlier this year, and I'm going to write some blog posts about it. That's one. If I do another book about Barcelona or include some of the places in Barcelona, that's two. So then I get an introduction to someone who is an editor at a magazine, and they say, oh, I like your pitch on Barcelona. Can you send me a draft? That's three. And then I go on a podcast. I talk about Barcelona. That's four. I go on a vlog or some kind of video podcast, something like Blab or Periscope. That's five. Mm-hmm. Maybe I write a different style of blog post, like my top 10 favorite things to do in Barcelona. That's six. Maybe I get a chance to write an excerpt or have my something published in an anthology, something like that. That's seven. Let's say I go back and live in Barcelona and I give tours to those places. That's eight. You know, so just off the top of my head, that's eight different ways of making money with the same travel experience and using the same experience to write about it in different ways that people will enjoy and reach out.
So creating multiple streams of income.
Yeah, quite potentially. And also thinking about the different ways that people consume information. Not everyone reads a blog, not everyone listens to a podcast, and the more different facets or different ways you put your knowledge, your intelligent discourse out there for people to enjoy, the better.
Absolutely. You mentioned Blab. That's my new and latest obsession, so we should do a Blab. I know that's a side note.
Yeah.
So we should do a Blab, definitely. Absolutely. Talk about that. I love to do that. But I love what you're saying. And you're really hitting on like the full 360 approach on embracing this travel lifestyle, but also really becoming that author. I think you're doing that in an effective manner. So I love that. And we're going to wrap up soon. But this, the other thing I want to talk about is you're married, right?
I am married. Yes.
You are. One of the questions that I have here is, how do you get into the married life, you know, of long-term experts? And what's that like? How do you manage that while you're traveling and you're being an expat and, you know, you're also married? And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of dynamics there that go. So,
well, I have to start by saying I got incredibly lucky. I married a wonderful lady who's as much a traveler as I am. Her name is Laura. And she's actually done a couple of guest posts on One Weird Globe. If you do a search for her name, that's probably the easiest way to find it. But, starts really by, well, a lot of the same mindsets. Who are you looking for? Are you looking for a wife or a husband? Are you looking for a travel buddy? Are you just looking for a one-night stand? What's on your plate right now? And what do you want out of the relationship? And, you know, you might also have to get your own mind right. Are you ready to have a girlfriend or a wife or a husband? Are you ready for that?
Mm.
And not everyone is. Finding someone that meets not just your personal lifestyle, but also your traveling lifestyle. Are you a slow traveler? Do you want to find somewhere and settle down for 6 months? Do you want to hit 5 countries in 48 hours? You know, if one of you is like, I want to hit 5 countries in 48 hours, and the other one's like, I want to settle in somewhere and move into an apartment and stay there for 6 months, there's going to be conflict just right
away. Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
I know that was one of the reasons you liked one of the podcasts. We had one with Evo and his wife. And they made that decision together, right? You know, they decided they were going to do this and travel the world. And it seems like what they're doing is slow travel. That was something they decided to do. So I was talking about this with one of my friends earlier. One thing that travel does do for you is that it does change you, whether you're aware of it or not. And at one point, one of your spouses or your significant other might change more than the other. So, you know, how does that work? You know, what type of jobs do you then get? You know, are you sacrificing a dream for the spouse? There's so many things. Yeah, you know, I'm not married. I haven't thought about these things. But from the outside looking in, I just think, you know, sometimes is one at the sacrifice? Or can you have it where both of you are just doing what you love?
Believe it or not, I actually think you in this case, you actually can have your cake and eat it too. It's going to be how exactly you do that is going to be dependent on a bunch of different stuff. How you're living, whether you have the money to go out and do a crazy trip around the world while the other one stays home. You know, there's so many individual moving parts there that it's really difficult to have a rule for everyone. But it really does start, in my case at least, it really does start with respect. And it starts with this mindset that I made a choice. I put a ring on my own finger. I put a ring on her finger, and I said, "You're mine. We're going to live the rest of our lives together, and whatever might come, we're going to work through it."
Right.
And so, in many cases, that choice, which I do believe to be the best choice I've ever made in my life.
That's good.
you kind of do find yourself locking in an option, if you will. But that doesn't always have to stay the same. You know, we had the opportunity to travel around Europe for 3 months, and that was a crazy, hectic time for someone that's used to living in one place and living there for 6 months, maybe longer. All of a sudden going to different hotels every few days and, you know, packing up our stuff and hauling everything we own from one place to the next. It was a crazy little time. Had a blast. Would not have changed one single bit of it. Maybe that one really crappy plane ride. But other than that, in terms of making marriage work with travel, it really goes back to respect, knowing that every choice you make affects them and vice versa. So if you're seeing that they're not feeling all that well, or maybe they don't want to do much today, maybe you're both just really behind on work, and so you agree just to take a work day. And we had a couple of those, even though we were in some beautiful places. We both kind of sat down, got some stuff done, and the next day went out, had some fun, and moved forward. Another thing to think about is how much time you spend together when you're traveling. My wife and I, right now in our apartment, we have different offices. We'll tend to do different things during the day. We'll always come back to the same bed, of course. But you don't need to be spending every single moment of every single day together. And after the newlywed period is kind of worn off, you kind of recognize you need your own space to, you know, enjoy your own life. And so your challenge may be finding the balance between being completely on your own to spending every minute, you know, virtually chained to the person you're with. So finding that balance might be a difficult thing for some folks, especially if you're on the road all the time, especially if you're traveling all the time and you need to have them, you know, close by. The simplest thing there is just to know when you can go out on your own, know when you need some time to yourself, and to make that known. Hey, honey, this castle is really boring to me. I'm going to relax out here. So you go ahead and enjoy. Or I'm going to go to the art gallery across the street while you enjoy the castle. And I'll meet you back here at the park at 3.
And then you're...
And you're off. You know, you don't feel like you have to be with them or go to every place that they do. And as soon as we made that sort of agreement, hey, I don't really feel like going into the castle. I'd rather go to the art gallery across the street. Or that statue, I don't know what that is, but I got to check that out. And I see you want to go into the castle. So, yeah, I'll catch up with you here in half an hour, you know. So you make a plan and you enjoy it.
No.
And as things change, you know, allow for the plan to change. But
I love what you're saying. I love what you're saying, because you're basically describing a partnership. You know, you sign up for the marriage, and it's, you know, for better or worse, you know, you're working together, and you're also simultaneously giving each other the chance to be their own individual selves. So it's definitely work, but you have to put in the work together as well to make sure it's successful.
Yeah.
But
Now with that said, I've continually been amazed by all the stuff you can so easily miss if you're traveling by yourself. Like if you're just looking around by yourself, you've only got one set of eyes, right? You've only got your own one perspective. And if you've brought someone else in your life and you're sharing your life with, doesn't matter if it's a man or woman, doesn't matter if it's old or young, that's another set of eyes. And that doubles your chances of seeing the awesome stuff around you. I cannot tell you how many things I missed because I was either too busy looking towards the left, looking towards the right, looking up when I should have looked down, vice versa. You can miss a lot of stuff, and that second set of eyes, again, it can be a friend, it can be a lover, it can be a spouse, whoever it might be, that second set of eyes helps to see some cool stuff you might otherwise miss. And it works both ways, too. Sometimes, whether it's a museum or a palace or a temple, there's just a whole lot of stuff going on. And so what we've kind of taken to do is, you know, kind of nudge her, hey, you see that? And I'm pointing to that one kind of weird statue in the corner, or she's pointing to, you know, some little piece of a painting that she has an eye for detail, you know. So, Having that extra set of eyes along, if nothing else, doubles the chances of seeing the awesome stuff around you.
Well, I want to thank you for saying that. I have a lot to look forward to when it's my time to get married. But
your time, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I got a little bit of more. I got a little bit ahead of me, but I am that guy that definitely loves to share these experiences with, you know, significant others. So I'm glad to hear that it's possible and that it definitely. No, something to look forward to. So,
yeah. One more thing. I should mention this earlier. Laura and I met on OkCupid.com.
Okay. What are you trying to say? You trying to say I'm not good enough to find my own lady? Is that what you're saying, Chris?
What I'm suggesting here for anyone that might be thinking, oh, online dating, that's so passe, that's so from the 90s or the early aughties. No, it still works. It's still awesome. And you can go into it with the mindset that you're looking for someone to meet in the real world that you would never have met in the real world. I would never have met Laura in the real world had I not first met her in the online world.
Not yet.
And one thing the online dating sites do is they let you be very specific about the kind of person you want to be with and all that. I have to tell you at the same time, that's also very presumptuous because the heart knows what it wants, and as sappy, silly as it sounds, on OkCupid, what you can do, there's like a match score, how much you match in a percentage. And at first, I started going out with girls that were like an 85% match or a 90% match. You know, we had a lot of stuff in common. Mm. And at first, I was thrilled. It was like, yeah, great. And then I would go on a first date, and you're going, I don't really want to date a clone of myself. That's kind of lame, kind of boring. And so you kind of opened up. I began reading the profiles a bit more carefully, looking at not just the words that they said, but how they said it. Do they sound like a pessimist? Do they sound like an optimist? Do they sound like they're enjoying life? Do they sound like they're just trudging through life? And you can kind of tell a lot about a person by that sort of thing. And actually, yeah, I think Laura and I, we were only like a 55 or 56% match.
Whoa.
As OkCupid goes. Now we are different in some ways. She is much more of an introvert. I'm much more of an extrovert. She's very much a book lover and a cat lover. And I like my books. The cats, they're hurt. Those are hurt. I'll pet them and play with them.
You're not into the feline. You're not into the felines, huh?
Not really into animals much at all. But no. So if you're looking for someone and you're online and you're thinking, gosh, where the hell are they? Get past yourself and thinking they've got to be 100% match. Because dating yourself, I have to say, it's probably one of the lamest things you'd ever do. Allow yourself to go past what you think you want and get yourself in positions where you can meet the people that sound interesting online, meet them in person, and then go from there.
No, I love it. I love it. And thank you so much for saying that. So, in order for people to reach out to you to get more awesome advice like you just delivered, and for people to work with you on your amazing new venture with your books, where can they reach out to you? And how can they co-author books with you?
Yeah, so the main travel blog has been One Weird Globe, just like it sounds, oneweirdglobe.com. The Choose a Way book series can be found at chooseaway.com, just like it sounds. I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/chooseaway and twitter.com/chooseawaybooks. Because someone else already got the Choose Away handle on Twitter. Chooseaway.com. The chances to get involved, if you look in the menu in the top right corner, there's some links to stuff specifically written towards the writers. And once you've read through all that, there's an application form. Take about 5 minutes and just help me understand what you've already done as far as travel writing goes. If you've not done any travel writing at all, that's actually okay. Just show me some kind of writing online or somewhere else that shows me you know what subject-verb agreement is. And I'll also note it's not limited to expats. The guy that wrote the Prague book, which comes out October 26th is the plan right now. He is a local. He's an Austrian guy. His name is Mark, and he was actually the tour guide that led us around Prague while we were traveling through Europe. His English is very good. He knows the town very well. And he was like, "Oh, well, you might have to edit my English because it's not very good." No, he spoke very good English. He knows the town. I'll work with someone that puts in the effort to make it happen.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we'll put the notes out there. I'll make sure it's in the show notes. But before you leave, I always ask this question. You should be expecting this question. It is the mission statement of what UID is and the Stoked by Nomads is. How do you use your difference to make a difference, Chris?
I use my difference, which is just being creative and being passionate about doing awesome stuff, and I put that into everything that I do. So creativity and passion go into making an awesome travel and life.
Awesome. Awesome. So you just, you know, you use it and you apply it to your everyday life, and it filters its way into your creativity and
it
just
really
your
does.
Being.
It really does. Like any, even like if you're working, even if you're working like a normal 9-to-5 job, you could take a different way to work.
Mm-hmm.
Try a different commute. Try a different bus. Try a different path. Be reading as you go. be open to talking to people as you go. Everything you do can be done in a creative way.
Love it. Love it. Well, thank you so much. I can't wait to put this out. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you because you're very interactive. You're energetic. I'm very energetic. So I love when the speaker out there is always like, ah, you know, we go toe-to-toe with that energy. And but I love what you're about. I love what you're doing, and I'll definitely get this out. This is going to be coming out soon because I know you've got to get this going and try to get some people. So I'll work in that, and hopefully the audience gets a lot from it and they reach out to you as soon as possible.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to working with more people. At this point, Prague, Houston, and Lisbon are the books coming out in 2015. There are a couple more writers out there working on stuff now, and those books will probably come out whenever they come in, probably early 2016. What I'm trying to do with authors right now is release one new book a month. And that sounds like a really fast pace to some people. How the hell do you write that? The writing. I edit and format and add the choices, publish a book, and then get them going on the promotion and such. So there's a whole bunch of other stuff that goes into making the book once they finish the writing part. So,
hey, awesome. I'll definitely do that then. But it's been a pleasure as always, sir, and I hope you enjoy Medellin.
I will enjoy Medellin as much as I can, my friend. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. Appreciate it.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uidmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.